Thursday, February 9th, I breakfasted with Lyndon and then left at 9:40 for my Spanish class. Since I'll only have half of it today, I want every minute possible. Only Grace and June were there. I stayed until a little past 11 and then returned to the White House for the 11:30 meeting on the North Portico with King Hassan. The big black limousine with the flags flapping rolled up around the drive between the line of servicemen at attention, and the flags of all the states in bright array, the ruffles and flourishes, and out stepped the monarch, a dapper, slight, youngish man with long sideburns and a very contained expression, wearing a short, checkered overcoat that looks like a sportsman and alligator shoes. His sister, the Princess Aika, followed him. He posed under the portico for pictures which are different this time because he had brought his two children. The Crown Prince, Sidi Mohammed, 3 years old, dressed in a white wool caftan and a white fez, and his four-year-old sister, Princess Lala, as normal and inattentive as any American 3- and 4-year-olds. Be trying out a new format for winter arrival ceremonies. Honor guard and national anthems under the North Portico and in through the Great Hall, filled to bursting with people who have been invited to witness the arrival ceremony, into the East Room and onto the stage where the welcoming speech and the answer take place. The East Room seemed very small with the stage up and the phalanx of TV and cameramen and newsmen and the crowd of guests. I feel that it takes away from the sense of elegance. I do not believe this format will work indoors. Outside, fine. The color, the pomp and ceremony, trumpets and flags are thrilling for visitors to watch. South grounds. After the speeches, we went to the Blue Room and met first the whole Moroccan delegation, which included 5 princes, 2 princesses, and 6 ministers of cabinet rank, and then all the African diplomats and a small group of Washingtonians, including, of course, Walter Tobrana and Edgar Morris. Then I escorted the princess out the front door, and she was gone. And I spent the afternoon working, having lunch on a tray in my room. Once I went down to see the dance rehearsal. The East Room was dark, only the spotlight on the stage, and Jose Limon and 3 dancers were practicing. It would be the Moor's Pavane, an interpretation of Othello from Shakespeare, with the 4 main characters. Jose Limon was as bald as an egg, but an altogether attractive-looking man. I marveled that he could be so graceful, so controlled. He's in his middle 50s. I had house guests coming, and I'd ask Marilyn to alert me when any of them arrived. And so I met Mr. and Mrs. Hackney from Marshall, who runs the bank that my daddy did business with for more than 50 years, and Mrs. Hudspeth, who guided first Linda and then Lucy through the maze of the university, and Joe Batson, while they were taking a tour. Later on, Governor Sanders of Georgia and Betty were coming, and then Mayor and Mrs. Wagner to be our house guests. I went up and had a cup of tea and a nice long visit with the Hackneys. I heard about the work of the Interracial Council in Marshall, the plans for a dam on Caddo Lake, and barges that would come up the Mississippi and then through the Red River, and then Caddo Lake and the bayou to Dangerfield and Jefferson, about the museum and the rather hopeless possibility that the brick house would ever be any sort of historic site open to the public. Sometime during the afternoon, I stopped in to see Betty and Carl, who looked very happy and carefree. I was wearing my ivory chiffon by Stavropoulos. Jean-Louis came and gave me a very fancy up hairdo, and I was ready by 7:15 to have pictures made by Okamoto in the green room and the yellow oval room. We're always using pictures that are 2 or 3 years old. This setting, these clothes, will, in the flash of an eye, like Cinderella, be gone for me. So I should get some good ones while I am here, to send out and to save. There's always that last-minute tension when Lennon is getting dressed about 10 minutes before visiting chief of state is supposed to arrive. But Lennon can dress in the flash of an eye. And we were downstairs on the front portico a moment or 2 past 8 to meet King Hassan and his party. He wore a white jalaba, it's called, a rather sheer homespun robe that can go over a suit, and a red fez. I'm told he always does this on a state visit, although at home he would be wearing a beautifully tailored western suit and driving his own sports car. and his sister, the Princess Aika, had on a beautifully embroidered light blue caftan that simply drifted around her ankles in long folds and innumerable strands of pearls. There was a general, I hope, business of turning and placing the guest for pictures first to the right and then to the left for the masked photographers, and then inside and up to the yellow oval room. It was a small group this time, Vice President without Muriel, Dean and Virginia Rusk, our ambassador and Mrs. Tosca, and the king's brother, Prince Moulay Abdullah, and his sister, the Princess Aika, and their ambassador and his very beautiful wife, Mrs. Larocky, and Linda Bird, who looked very Spanish in a deep rose silk, the beaded black velvet jacket, the hair up very high in loops. The Princess Aika was very difficult to engage in conversation. She's their ambassador to London. But I could only get monosyllable answers to questions, though I searched eagerly and I hoped brightly for some mutual topic. Jimmy gave me a look, and I said, "May I ask you to join me in this side of the room?" And gathered up the princess, the king, and Lyndon around the desk for the exchange of our gifts. A Vermeil humidor with a seal, and a great big western-style saddle for the king, who is an enthusiastic horseman, and a replica of a silver-mounted hunting sword worn by George Washington throughout most of the American Revolution. The original is in the Smithsonian. And there was a Vermeil bowl, just like those we use here in the White House, the bamboo style for flowers, for the princess, a whole group of books. And then we were over at the other side of the room for their gifts. I am often reminded that we are a very simple democratic nation in our dealings with long-established monarchies. For Lyndon, there was an enormous sword in gold with elaborate carving that glittered with jewels. George Washington's was for a simple soldier. For me, a very elaborate gold box. And for the family, a set of gold dishes, our initials. And then the honor guard came in to take the colors. Lyndon escorted the king, and the rest of us fell in behind. Prince Moulay Abdullah, the princess and I, the vice president, and the Rusk. As we lined up at the foot of the stairs, I was aware of a commotion on my right. Somebody seemed to have tripped. I thought it was the princess. It would only increase the attention to it if I looked or helped. So I smiled straight ahead. Next day I noticed with some annoyance the brief second when the Princess Aika, tangled in her long caftan, had sunk to the floor was the picture they used in both papers. At any rate, it was a very graceful fall. The ballet itself. I've always regarded those stairs as a hazard in high heels and a long dress. But at least my evening dresses are not as long as the caftans. I can't imagine anyone running after the children or driving the car to the grocery store wearing one. It was a smaller dinner tonight, only 135, since the king had brought no wife. Actually, his queen is never spoken of. There were two cabinet members besides the Russ, the McNamaras and the Freemans. The Senate was represented by the Clifford Cases of New Jersey and the Jean McCarthys, he looking very tanned and handsome, and Abigail relaxed and well, but not ready to go back to taking Spanish. She's writing one book and editing another before she joins us in April. And there are four from the house. And among the former ambassadors to Morocco, there were the Julius Holmes, who had taken such good care of us when he had been ambassador to Tehran on our visit there. I'd asked the Bill Crooks, just up from San Marcos, as director of VISTA. Jack Vaughan of the Peace Corps was there. From the world of entertainment, there was David Brubeck, the pianist, and Ray Harm, the artist, and Herman Woop, the novelist. And besides our house guest, another Texan, Bob Clayburgh of the King Ranch, and Linda's host in New Orleans, the Herman Kohlmeyers, when she'd spent New Year's Eve there with George to usher in 66, and my host from San Francisco for the opera, the Robert Watt Millers, very aristocratic and fine-looking. I was glad to see them. My house guest, the Bob Wagners, arrived at 8 o'clock after a very bad flight and were downstairs in evening clothes only 20 minutes later. From the press, there was lovely Shana Alexander of Life and Betty Beale, been to Morocco and knows the king, and the Kenneth Crawfords of Newsweek, and Josephine Ripley of the Christian Science Monitor. And Howard K. Smith of ABC, one of the few interviews I remember fairly well enjoying. Business was represented by the Carter Burgesses of American Machine and Foundry, and William Dunn of Associated General Contractors. And after he'd gone down the line, I could have kicked myself for not thanking him for what they're doing with Walt Whitman Park. And Tom Gates, who used to be in Eisenhower's cabinet, and my old friend Armand Hammer, who before the evening was over, said to me, "When you're working on a project, something you're interested in, let me know. I'd like to help you." And the Albert Nickersons, an attractive, youthful Bill Youngman, one of Tom Corcoran's associates. Scooter and Dale had returned from Morocco only the week before, glowing with the wonderful time they'd had. It was a cross-section of our country. The president of the University of Connecticut, Dr. Babbage, from the world of education, the Matt Guinans from labor, and a fair quota of staff. I was seated between the king and Prince Moulay Abdullah. I did not find it an easy evening. The king is intelligent, attractive, but perhaps it was my fault. I did not find him easy to talk to. Once when I spoke with admiration of him having appointed a woman as an ambassador to England, his sister, he replied in rather solemn fashion, as though admonishing me, in the Muslim religion, there is equality between men and women, despite what many people think. I asked the prince on my left to tell me about the official residence of the king in Morocco, and I really got a capsule of the royal life. There's not one official residence, but 10. And the king is expected to spend some time in each of them. Each has been used by different monarchs as the centuries have rolled along. I was especially grateful to Margie McNamara, who on the prince's other side was being so lively that he couldn't help but be entertained. And across the table, Jane Freeman's bright eyes and flashing smile were keeping her partners lively. One of them was a Moroccan, also dressed in his jalaba, but he had the hood, which is attached to it, snugly fitted around his face. It reminded me of an old-fashioned nightgown with a cap, and the lines went through my head from the night before Christmas. My mom in a kerchief and I in my cap had just settled ourselves for a long winter's nap, and all during dinner, every time I looked at him, I had to smother a ridiculous impulse to laugh. The king tasted hardly a thing, no main course, and of course no wine, although he says that wine is one of the principal products of his country. The hardest job I know is that of translator, and it amazes me when they perform it, often apparently without notes beforehand, with such glib skill. Very few could challenge him there. At any rate, Linda's table was having a good time, Betty Sanders, Joe Batson, Mr. Brubeck. The singing violins are always, for me, the romance of the evening, the high point. They left even the most silent and diffident guests into a circle of enchantment, I think. We had coffee and liqueurs in the blue and red room, and then we went in and took our seats on the front row, Jimmy searching for the various princes and princesses to line them up with the king and Lyndon and I and the Princess Aika. And then Jose Limon gave one of the best performances I've ever seen in the White House. Ballet is not my first love. Drama is. But this was sheer drama, and to me at least, the dancing secondary. Iago was the very spirit of evil. You could feel his nasty cobwebs of doubt closing you in as he leaned over Othello's shoulder. Bassett said that Jose Limon had gone to see the president's barber this afternoon because he had a 5 o'clock shadow. To me, he seemed bald as an egg. The gentle, innocent Desdemona gave a beautiful performance, sinking to death like a fragile flower on the stage, while her tormented Othello laid bare the agony of his soul in every gesture. When they had finished, Lyndon and I rose and escorted the king up on the stage to meet them and thank them. There were pictures. And then, as we made our way out into the hall where trays of champagne were already being passed, the king, with a minimum of talk, said good night, and we accompanied him to the front door, the princess right behind. I think the Larockies were disappointed to go so early. It was scarcely 11:30. Mrs. Larockie is one of the most beautiful ambassador's wives in Washington. The Muslims are very in these days. Some of the loveliest women and gayest parties. Lyndon, too, left early, a little past 11:30. I stayed almost half an hour longer to tour the floor, speak to as many guests as I could. But suddenly it seemed full of press and aides, and most of the guests had gone. Snow was falling heavily, and a good many of them had laughingly said, "If we don't go soon, we'll be snowed in with you for the night." Close to 12, I asked Mia and Mrs. Wagner to join me on the second floor for a nightcap. And Linda and Joe came with us. The Hackneys and the Sanders had gone up some 10 or 15 minutes earlier. Reluctantly, I decided not to call them down, but that was the best part of the evening. We simply put up our feet and talked. Mayor Wagner is a very happy, relaxed man. His wife is younger, gay, and good for him. If he misses his hard job, it's only nostalgically, would be my guess. We talked of his sons. One has a Marshall Fellowship to Oxford, of New York politics. It was a pleasant 30 minutes, and then to bed. Lyndon had been simply too tired to join us. Strain and sleeplessness sometimes take their toll on even the toughest. And the dark cloud of blame and criticism is pervasive these days. My most pleasant memory of the evening were the actors themselves, Jose Limon, whom I'd talked to quite a little downstairs, and the three with him. I'd been a little startled when Rostow had come up to me and said, "I think Bess can relax. I don't think anybody was worried about the entertainment except the State Department." I questioned him, and he said, "There'd been a flap about presenting Othello, lest it be considered a slur to the Moroccans. To me, it was a very foolish walking on eggs business. Othello, about whom Shakespeare wrote some 300 years ago, was certainly not the first jealous older man married to a beautiful young wife." Nevertheless, I felt, and why I can't quite say, that it hadn't been a really great party. So it was balm and solace later on to hear my house guests exclaiming with delight about what a good time they had at their tables, about the food, the violins, the entertainment, everything. House guests for a state dinner, old friends from Texas, governors, longtime political friends, are one of the extra touches that I have enjoyed and that I think mean something to the people who share them.